Support for NPR comes from ADP. Say you're in HR and a solar flare adds an extra hour to each day. How would this impact business? ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to help your business take on the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
Queen Elizabeth II died today at the age of 96. She was the longest-serving British monarch, and she was undeniably a major figure in pop culture as well. Her image on television in series like The Crown and in movies like The Queen never seemed to quite capture who she was, and yet people kept trying and trying. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're looking back at the life and legacy of Queen Elizabeth II on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
Elizabeth was born in 1926. She became queen when she was 25. She had her coronation several months later, and it was widely considered one of the first really big televised news events. She eventually had four children with her husband, Prince Philip: Charles, Anne, Andrew, and Edward. As the oldest, Charles is now king. What we're going to try to do is wrap our heads around the pop culture understanding of Elizabeth and how it played out in movies, both comedic and dramatic, and on television, and even at the Olympics. We're not going to touch on the larger history of the monarchy or British colonization, not because they're not important, but because that's not our expertise. But I encourage you to seek out the people who are writing about those things as part of their reflections on her death, because they are a big part of the story. We're also not going to cover all the family gossip, because we assume you already know exactly as much about all of that as you want to. The royal family is a complicated institution that has fans and detractors and a whole lot of people who don't care about it. We're going to try to dive a little bit into how it's played out on television and in movies. We talked with our pal Kristen Meinzer about Queen Elizabeth. She's a royal watcher and the co-host of the podcast When Meghan Met Harry. You watched this queen for many years.
Yes.
What opinion of her did you develop?
She's an icon. She's almost like not human. She's like superhuman.
Yeah.
She has been around for 14 U.S. presidents. She's on money. Her popularity and her visibility have lasted longer than any other human I can think of.
Yeah.
And not just in my lifetime, in my parents' and my grandparents' lifetime. I mean, she goes so far back. I mean, when we think about icons, we oftentimes think of people like Elizabeth Taylor, but Elizabeth Taylor is nothing compared to Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah. And, you know, for people who may have lost track of this, she became queen in 1952. That's a really long run, longest serving British monarch. And she was really young when she became queen.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that sometimes we forget the tragedy of what brought her to this. I mean, there were multiple tragedies in the family, because originally she was never supposed to ascend to the throne. Her uncle, Edward, he fell in love with Wallis Simpson. That was considered a crisis. He stepped down from the throne because he wanted to be with her. She was an American. She was twice divorced. She was considered unsuitable. And then Queen Elizabeth's father, he became George, the king. And that only lasted a few years before, you know it, Elizabeth is a young newlywed, and her father is dead. He was not king for very long. And so those dual tragedies of her uncle having to step down and her father then dying so young, that's the other side of the coin. We think, oh my gosh, Queen Elizabeth served for so long. She served for so long, though, because of something that wasn't a happy series of events. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think that beginning of her time as queen, being as tragic as it was and as sort of unexpected as it was, is part of why her image, when you think about it in things like The Crown, the image of her is really steeped in that idea that she had this very tragic beginning. Do you have a pop culture portrayal of her that you think captures something about her in an interesting way?
Oh, so many. Obviously, on The Crown, I think The Crown humanized young Elizabeth to many of us in a way that maybe we hadn't thought about before, those of us who weren't alive back then, I should say, because in the 1950s, she was just the same age as a lot of college co-eds, frankly, or people who are just starting out in life, people who are renting their first apartments, and she was suddenly thrust into this role. And so I think that the show The Crown really shows that, even though she was raised with all of the right, you know, educators, nannies, governesses, and so on, and she was raised in a palace and so on, she was still just a very young woman who was trying to figure out all sorts of things just about being a human and being a woman, much less being a leader. And so I think that The Crown does a very good job, particularly, you know, Claire Foy, I speak of here, in playing the younger version of Elizabeth when she was first ascending the throne.
What are your feelings about the portrayals of her? Because in my lifetime, she simply was always Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
She was sort of eternal. And my image of her, I think, didn't change that much from, you know, when she was probably 60 to the time of her death. And so I'm curious how you feel about sort of the portrayals of her more as an older person, as a sort of the stiffer kind of Helen Mirren type of performances that tried to get at what she was like as an older person, by which time she had kind of, to me, slipped a bit behind such a veil of mystery in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think she absolutely has been behind a veil of mystery, but also that veil of mystery has also allowed her to be depicted in ways that maybe we wouldn't have expected in the past. So specifically, I'm thinking about the 2012 Olympic Games in London. And I'm not sure if you remember the Queen's depiction of herself in the opening ceremonies. Daniel Craig comes to the castle as James Bond. He interrupts her as she's, you know, finishing up some correspondence at her writing desk. And he and the corgis then accompany her to the helicopter, and they fly over London and wave to everybody, and then they skydive into the stadium.
Right, right.
And I think about that as one of my very favorite depictions of Queen Elizabeth. And half of that depiction is her. Half of it is obviously a stunt double. She's not skydiving from a helicopter. But
I'd like to think.
But I think that that is something that she's been able to do with time because of that veil of mystery, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
She almost became so far removed from what it is to be human that she can become a cartoon of herself in some ways if she wants to in certain instances. Another depiction of the Queen I just want to bring up, which wasn't on film, it was in Michelle Obama's memoir, Becoming. She talks about the Queen being an utter delight. And Michelle Obama broke protocol. You're not supposed to touch the Queen, but there are photos of her just wrapping her arms around the Queen, and she's just cuddling the Queen. And she says, the Queen is just so funny, and she makes everybody feel so good. And it's hard to not, you know, want to cuddle the Queen. And the Queen didn't seem put off at all by the cuddles.
In the gloriousness of that outfit that she had on, she put on the little bitty pin we gave her. And I did the same thing. I was like, oh, you wore the pin? And she just said, yes.
You know, that depiction in Michelle Obama's book was, no, the Queen, what a delightful, sweet woman, such a cuddler.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I was briefly in London to help with coverage of Prince William and Kate, then Middleton's wedding, the British people who are interested in the royal family is already a subset,
mm-hmm.
right? And the people who are enthusiastic about the royal family is a subset of a subset. There were these women there who were very, very enthusiastic, these sort of older women. They were so kind. And but really, it was seeing the Queen go by was just a big deal. And there was a woman who was standing there with her camera. She took pictures of everything that was happening. And then when the Queen actually came by, not very far from where we were standing, and after she had gone by, the woman said, I didn't even get a picture. I was so mesmerized by watching her go by. Does that surprise you?
Not really. Queen Elizabeth, she's probably the most famous woman on the planet and has been for 90 plus years. You know, in passing, she will continue to be probably the most famous woman on the planet.
Yeah.
She is just that huge. And she is the sovereign of many people. She, for those people who don't see her as their sovereign, she is this other kind of icon. Everything from the Sex Pistols song, God Save the Queen, which I know is one extreme version of the Queen being memorialized. God save the Queen. to all the movie depictions which you spoke of, to just the fact that you go to so many countries in the world and there's still the queen on the money, or there's still the queen's portrait in the classroom and so on. And
yeah,
she's just bigger than any other person who is in that many classrooms,
yeah,
who is on that much currency.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious too, in recent years, during the marriages of both Prince William and Prince Harry, there has been so much criticism of the royal family as sort of an institution. And that obviously predates them. It obviously also involves Princess Diana and other things. And some of it is more political and has to do with less the personal angle of how people in the family are treated and more sort of what the proper role of a monarchy is or isn't. But I've always been surprised that it doesn't feel to me that was directed as much at her as it was the family slash institution, what people talk about as the firm. Mm-hmm. And she somehow seemed to, as a person, she very rarely shows that kind of warmth and humor that would naturally endear you to people. And yet somehow that anger at the family and the institution has not seemed to be mostly aimed at her. Is that your sense?
Yeah, that's my general sense as well. I mean, when we think of who is the recipient a lot of the anger in the family, it's still Prince Charles, frankly.
Yeah.
Prince Charles, who never really seemed to stand up to his mom, who never seemed to be a good husband to Diana, who was cheating on Diana, who never seemed very kingly in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting that there's so much anger still at Charles,
yeah,
but she just doesn't get as much of the brunt of that. And it's not to say that the queen never made missteps. The queen made many missteps, and that's really what the movie The Queen, starring Helen Mirren, was about, was one of the worst periods of missteps she had when Diana died.
I doubt there is anyone who knows the British people more than I do, Mr. Blair, nor who has greater faith in their wisdom and judgment. And it is my belief that they will any moment reject this mood, which is being stirred up by the press, in favor of a period of restrained grief and sober private mourning.
And what you're speaking of with the Queen maybe being too standoffish, with not showing enough emotion, she had to wrestle with that. And whether it was her own decision, whether it was her advisors, whether it was her family, we don't fully know everything that happened behind closed doors there. But she had to show a little bit of emotion. She had to say, the reason you haven't heard from me isn't because I don't care about you, my subjects. It's because I was trying to be a grandmother and just spend time with my grandkids.
Right.
She rescued herself there, but she was really not doing what needed to be done for those first several days there.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, in the special that Prince Harry and Meghan did with Oprah, it was so evident that there was still, again, such warmth toward her personally. There seems to be an ability to separate her as a person from her as a part of an institution, despite the fact that the windows into who she is as a person are so limited. I wonder whether you think any of the portrayals of her, whether comedic or dramatic, have ever, I don't know, suggested anything interesting about her that has affected how she's seen.
Well, one thing I find that's really interesting is that, you know, a lot of the comedy we get about the royal family, it's based on leaks from the palace, probably the staff members, acquaintances, people overhearing things. Like, who can ever forget that Prince Charles wanted to be reincarnated as a tampon so he could live inside of Camilla forever? What I find really, really interesting about the queen is there never seem to be leaks about her.
Yeah.
So there's never been, in my opinion, a successful Queen Elizabeth parody that was tapping into something that she really did, because nothing ever got leaked that we could actually hear about that she did. And so I think that's part of why those comedic depictions of the queen, they've been less than successful over the years, because they're not really based on real gossip or anything we actually know.
Right.
They're just like, look, I'm very stiff and have a handbag. I like my corgis. And it's like,
that's what I mean. There's nothing to make comedy about, because yes, you get so little about her. That's what I'm trying to get at. And I think, you know, I thought it was very interesting. Did you see the Broadway musical about Diana? that was on Netflix, came to Netflix?
No. I felt that for my job I should, but then I just couldn't. As a royal watcher, I've been asked so many times to comment on this, but too many people I love and trust like you, Linda, made me not want to see it.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, the reason why I think it is interesting is that one of the few things in it that I did think was intriguing was they draw a parallel between the Queen and Barbara Cartland, who was a relative of Diana's, who was a romance author. There's this effort to kind of bring out that somewhere in the idea of Elizabeth is this person who could have been like a nurturing grandparent or parent. But even though that's true, they go back to that idea that even in that musical, Diana, who is so miserable as portrayed there about the way that her interactions with the royal family are going, still has some level of fondness for the Queen, who then sings this song about, you know, how she remembers her marriage when she was a young bride. And there's a desire to portray her as having a little bit of, you know, secretly she was a warm person. Secretly she was a sentimental person in a way that sometimes she doesn't seem in her public face.
A long time ago, princess like you was young and so scared of all she must do. She married a prince.
Yeah. And I think that we have seen bits and pieces of that through the years in that musical, as you just said. But then also in interviews with her family members, as you said, in the interview that Harry and Meghan did with Oprah, they spoke fondly of the Queen. But also Harry, in his other interviews, when he was on with James Corden, riding a double-decker bus around LA, and talking about what it was like when he FaceTimed regularly with his grandmother and grandfather, who would, of course, be the Queen and Philip.
She sent us a waffle maker for Archie.
No.
So breakfast now, maybe a little bit of honey, maybe some syrup.
Sorry, you're glossing over the fact that I cannot for the life of me imagine the Queen ordering a waffle maker to be sent to Santa.
It's funny to hear those little bits and pieces of the Queen kind of keeping up with technology, kind of joking around, trying to maintain some connection with her family. And then to remember, back when she was born, there were no transatlantic phone calls. I think it's hard to separate the Queen from the person.
Well, she will probably always be a bit opaque, but I think there are many portrayals to check out. As we said, The Crown, the film The Queen, other portrayals that you think people should check out if they're curious about her?
I was going to say also in Spencer. I thought the Queen in Spencer, she brought a smile to my face in that one. She also, in Spencer, seemed a little bit human there. There's a moment on the steps of Sandringham Castle where she talks to Princess Di and essentially, you know, said, I know what it's like.
Yeah.
I'm currency, you're currency, we're all currency. Mm-hmm. And even though she's speaking the obvious, it seemed like a moment of kindness being extended to Diana, where in the rest of the movie, she does not feel like any kindness is being extended to her.
Well, she certainly was and is an icon and a complicated pop culture figure. We want to know what you think about Queen Elizabeth II. I imagine there are some portrayals in TV and movies we didn't get to here. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. This episode was produced by Candace Lim and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election: guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games, not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest-growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.